One person is dead and two are injured after a backcountry skiing accident near Haines yesterday. Alaska State Trooper spokesperson Megan Peters said troopers received a call from Haines Police yesterday afternoon about an accident in the backcountry, although she did not know the exact location. The Haines trooper is currently out of town on patrol and was not able to respond immediately. Peters said a trooper will arrive in Haines from Juneau today to conduct an investigation. The deceased was identified by troopers as Christian Cabanilla. He's been listed as a guide for a local heliskiing company, Southeast Alaska Backcountry Adventures. The company did not respond to messages yesterday evening. Cabanilla's biography on the company's website says he is an international backcountry snowboard guide working in Alaska, Chilean Patagonia, and Antarctica with more than a decade of experience in the Alaska heliski industry. Says he is also a commercial helicopter pilot in Alaska. Peters said she did not have any information on what caused the death and injuries or whether an avalanche had occurred. She said the two injured skiers had non-life-threatening injuries. Two medevac aircraft were seen arriving and leaving Haines yesterday afternoon. Peters said by the time troopers received the call, everyone involved was already out of the field and in Haines receiving medical treatment. This is Haines' third heliskiing fatality in 2 years. Last year, a guide and a skier were killed in a March avalanche while skiing with a different company. A lawsuit over allegedly defective engines for the state's fast ferries has come to an end. A settlement was announced Friday afternoon after nearly 3 years of litigation and just before the start of trial. State Attorney Dana Burke says the Alaska Marine Highway System will get 8 new engines provided by the German manufacturer MTU Friedrichshafen. There'll be an option for the state to purchase 2 spare engines nearly at cost. Burke says the settlement also calls for a maintenance agreement and new 5-year extended warranty on the new engines for the fast ferries Fairweather and Chiniga.
We've built into this settlement agreement an improved, mutually beneficial working relationship that's going to allow these engines to continue to operate in ferry service from here on out. And it's not just a rhetorical flourish with respect to an agreement to do that. We have binding commitments that make us do that.
Value of the new engines was not immediately available, but Burke says MTU could deliver and install them for each of the ferries starting in the fall. Burke promised that the settlement agreement will be made public as soon as all the parties signed off on it. That may happen sometime this week. Doug Serdaley is the Alaska attorney for MTU.
It has taken the parties and counsel working full-time nearly 3 weeks to develop this settlement agreement. And a lot of thought and effort has gone into it. And both sides think it's a very fair and a very reasonable agreement for both sides.
Both Burke and Serdaley asked that April's trial be vacated or taken off of the calendar. The state's case against MTU will be dismissed while the state hopes to preserve its interest against Robert Director Incorporated, the Connecticut shipyard and builder of the ferries, and the other defendant in the case. That company is currently mired in bankruptcy court and is not currently part of the state's lawsuit. The U.S. Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C. has upheld the listing of polar bears as threatened. APRN's Peter Granitz has more.
The polar bear was listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act in 2008. Because the appeals court upheld that ruling, no laws change. Companies looking to operate in sensitive habitats will still need to undergo the existing review processes. Alaska Attorney General Mike Garrity says it's too early for the state to decide what options it has. He says that the polar bear population is healthy, and this ruling sets a precedent that it's legal to preemptively list a species as threatened.
The polar bear is based on a 45-year projection. I mean, nobody disputes that the current species has a healthy population. It takes a certain amount of speculation to figure out what's going to happen 45 years from now with climate change. And also, what about the adaptability of the species to loss of habitat?
The polar bear's plight is so clear and so dire, there was really never any serious question that they deserved protection under the Endangered Species Act.
Cassie Siegel is an attorney with the Center for Biological Diversity. Her group was one of the appellees in the suit. Siegel says the polar bear is the first species to be placed on the endangered list solely because of climate change. And now that the court has ruled, she says climate policy needs to follow.
The science on climate change and the very real threats that the polar bear faces have long been indisputable. They are now also legally indisputable as well. But what we really need to do now is to get serious about swift greenhouse pollution cuts, because that's what we need to do to save polar bears.
Siegel says it's only a matter of time for Fish and Wildlife to upgrade the polar bear's status from threatened to endangered, but that's another case entirely. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
The Alaska Federation of Natives has changed its bylaws to give tribes more votes during conventions. The move separates tribal votes from corporation votes. From Bethel, Angela Denning Barnes has more on the story.
The new bylaw amendment gives tribes their own class of membership. In the past, tribes were registered along with village corporations, so tribes and village corporations often shared membership dues and split convention votes. Now, voting includes four categories: regional corporations, the regional nonprofit Native associations, village corporations, and tribes. It will give tribes in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta hundreds more votes, 516 more to be exact. Board member Anna Hoffman is a village representative from the Chulista AVCP region.
It does increase the village impact of the vote at the AFN convention. So the village and tribal presence really has increased a lot.
AFN's 36-member board of directors accepted the proposed change at their meeting last month. Another change they made broadens the AFN board composition to include tribal members. In the past, each region had three board members, one from its regional corporation, one from its regional nonprofit, and one from its village corporations. Now, the village corporation seat is a village representative seat and is open to all eligible tribal members as well as village corporations. These changes will affect the next AFN convention, which is scheduled for October in Fairbanks. Another bylaw change adopted by the AFN board ratifies the co-chair system of leadership, which has been in place for many years. The next AFN board meeting will be held May 9th in Kotzebue. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
Scientists have carbon dated a skull that was found near Rango last year. Shady Grove Oliver has more on that story.
Last October, Vina Stowe and her family were trout fishing and moose hunting near Government Slough, about 5 miles from Wrangell. While walking through the forest, she found what appeared to be a human skull on the ground. It's usually best to leave remains where they are rather than moving them. It can be considered disrespectful to disrupt them, and it's very important for officials to know exactly where they're found. However, Stowe knew the area was prone to flooding, so she made the decision to carefully bring the skull back to Wrangell. She photographed the area and pinpointed the skull's location on Google Maps. She handed the remains over to police, who notified the Forest Service. The skull has now been carbon dated. It was found to be 1,080 years old. When remains are determined to be Native American or Alaska Native, officials must follow certain rules in handling them. These are laid out in the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act. But remains can also give invaluable information about what was happening a long time ago in Southeast Alaska. In Wrangell, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.